The Month in Maine News. On this Halloween, Maine political candidates are out trick-or-treating for support, with less than a week to go before Election Day. Most of the attention has been on the four-way race for governor and in the 2nd District Congressional Contest. So where do we stand? I'm Keith Shortall. Today, we'll bring in our panel of newspaper editors to assess the campaigns in these final days and talk about the lingering voter confusion over ranked choice voting and which races it will and will not apply to this year. We'll explore the fallout from Maine GOP Senator Susan Collins' vote to support the nomination of controversial Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh and other news of the past month, time permitting. And we want to hear from you. The Month in Review. Maine Calling is next. First, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. Election Day is less than 1 week away, and not surprisingly, stories about the campaigns dominated the news this past month. During the first few days of October, the top story was Senator Susan Collins' decision to support the nomination of Supreme Court hopeful Brett Kavanaugh. Today, our panel of Maine newspaper opinion page editors returns to discuss those stories and more. With me in our studio, Ben Bragdon of the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel, Greg Kesich of the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram, and joining us from our Bangor studio is Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News. And as always, we want to hear from you. What news from the past month do you want to talk about? The phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome, everybody. We're going to start with the governor's race today. Maine Public held the live televised gubernatorial debate on Sunday at 8 o'clock. I should mention it was opposite the final game of the World Series, but maybe you missed it. But we'll be re-airing that, and you can see those the rebroadcast dates for radio and TV on our Your Vote page. But I guess some people were anticipating maybe there might be a little bit more in the way of fireworks, Greg, in this one as we got closer to Election Day, because this race has really been marked by not much in the way of the typical late-going, high-energy exchanges. Right. Why is that?
You know, we had a debate also on October 10th, and we had built-in time for anticipating that candidates would be challenging each other and that they needed to have follow-up. And they didn't do it. And the only real friction came when the moderator really kind of prodded Janet Mills to say, who are you referring to when you say the governor shouldn't be a climate denier? So it's either like a coincidence that all four of them were taking the same track, or I think it's got something to do with the way election campaigns are conducted now. They don't seem to be as much about trying to persuade voters and win people over as much as trying to maximize the base.
Yeah. Susan, I wanted to go to you. Do you think this is because this is just who these candidates are? I mean, Moody has sort of inherited the LePage team, but there's not much in the way of LePage style coming through Moody. Is that because that's just not who he is?
I mean, maybe. I think that is really interesting because he does have some of the LePage folks working for them, and they have not been afraid to engage in negative campaigning in the past or with other campaigns that they're currently working on. So maybe it does have to do with the personalities of the candidates. And clearly Moody is, you know, projecting his image as just nice all-around guy as a counter to LePage and how he has behaved on occasion. But it's interesting. Today, I believe Janet went up with a television ad criticizing Moody after the New York Times story about how he discriminated against a pregnant woman who worked for his company. There's been some response or pre-response since they posted at first on the Moody webpage as well. But that's the only really negative thing that they've been talking about. And it's come up very late in the campaign.
Yeah. So, Ben, we see the advertising is much more over the top as compared to when they're all four on a stage. What's your take?
Yeah, I guess kind of what Susan said, Moody's appeal is his kind of down-home charisma, his enthusiasm, his optimism. It's not his, you know, his wide policy knowledge or anything like that. It's his story and who he is. And if he gets up there and starts throwing around starts attacking his opponents, I think it's going to look like it's, someone on his shoulder talking besides him. I mean, you can tell when he's been feeding these lines. When we had him to the editorial board, he could say things, and then the follow-ups weren't very deep. So, I think he's just trying to keep with his strength and doing a lot with what this team did with LePage 4 years ago, which was play to his strengths, put him in front of people in areas where he can be, he can talk about the things that he wants to talk about, and don't let him turn into the raging LePage. And so that's how they protected that side of LePage now, and this is probably how they're trying to protect the image of Moody they're putting forward. However, we got this, we have these a week to go now, and we have these polls showing Janet Mills with a decent lead. You wonder how his team's going to react to that.
Independent Alan Caron, one of two independents in this race, took part in our debate on Sunday, mm-hmm. and then the very next morning dropped out and endorsed Janet Mills. Do we have a sense, Greg, of how that may affect the horse race here in the final run?
I don't think it'll have much effect because he wasn't doing very well in terms of, he wasn't gaining any traction. I think he won a lot of admirers in the debate period of the election. I don't know that he won a lot of voters. People saw him as the guy with the most ideas. I think the biggest impact it's going to have going forward is now there's always going to be a question for the trailing candidate in a three-way race or a four-way race. Will you get out like Alan Caron? I mean, there wasn't really a historical precedent for it before Monday, and now there is.
Yeah, Susan. So Terry Hayes, the other independent it is still in the race, has no intention of dropping out and claims to be drawing Republican votes, which some question. Might she have a spoiler effect in this race?
Oh, absolutely, she could. I mean, I think she's much more likely to take votes away from Janet Mills than she is from Sean Moody. In a lot of ways, she and Janet are similar. I mean, it's interesting up around Bangor, there are conservatives for Hayes signs popping up. So you have to wonder, are these folks really fans of Terry Hayes, or are they trying to get people to question their support of Janet and come over to the Hayes campaign? So, hard to know what's going on. And of course, we don't have ranked choice voting in this election. So, the whole point of ranked choice, according to its backers, is to end the spoiler effect. So without it, if Hayes gathers enough support, it comes from one of the two other candidates.
Yeah. Ben, any further thoughts on that?
No, I just would mention that what we know from numbers coming from these polls don't really mention Hayes. They don't, when they poll, they don't, it's someone else or undecided, So it's tough to tell where she is in that and how much of that lead, Mills's lead, she could take away. It certainly seems like most of what she would take would be from Janet Mills, but who knows? We thought that 4 years ago with Elliot Cutler, and I'm not sure it was true then.
Let's move to the Senate race. The tone, decidedly different, mm-hmm. at least based upon what we saw yesterday in a taping of the Senate debate at Bowdoin College yesterday. I want to play an exchange here that was one of the more fiery moments. This is an exchange between Democrat Zach Ringelstein and Republican Eric Brakey.
Zach Ringelstein, you have a chance to ask Eric Brakey a question.
Sure. So in the last few days, you have gone ahead and attacked immigrants. And, I taught in immigrant communities the majority of my career. And all the immigrants I know have more integrity in their pinky than, honestly, you have in your entire body. From the way that I have seen things in the last few days, I have just been really disappointed at the racist, borderline neo-Nazi rhetoric And honestly, it's a disgrace that we have a white supremacist on this stage with us in a U.S. Senate debate. We need
so we
to call
have 20 seconds.
You know, is there a
question
there, Zach?
Yeah, sure.
Or are you just on your bully
can
pulpit?
Can you sleep at night?
You know, Zach, here's the thing. Maine people are sick and tired of being called racist simply because we don't want our communities to transform overnight. We're sick and tired of being called racist because we don't want non-citizens on our welfare rolls ahead of people who've paid into the system. We're sick and tired of being called
You're
racist.
Not the victim.
Excuse me, Zach. You asked me a question, and I'm answering it.
Please have.
You've been incredibly disrespectful. We're trying to have a conversation here, and you're the one, you seem to be the only person on this stage who's actually obsessed with race. So if there's someone racist on this stage right here, I'm looking right at you.
That's ridiculous.
All right, I'll let that run a little bit so we can get a sense of the whole.
That was a powerful performance by Angus King, I thought. you kids, go ahead.
Well, what you don't see on the radio is during that moment. So King is in the lectern in the middle. He took two steps backward. line of sight. But let me just get your reaction, Ben. I'll start with you. What's your take on why these are the two sort of folks that are trailing behind Angus King, trying to get closer to Angus King, but they're attacking each other.
Yeah, well, first of all, they kind of are a representation of this big fight that's going on across the country, which is the kind of young progressive Democrats that are moving further to the left and the Trumpian Republicans who are creating their own little area off to the right. And Zach Ringelstein is a Democratic Socialist. He's a progressive. He's left of Angus King. And Eric Brakey's really taking on that Trump mantle, particularly in the last month or so. So that's the debate that's happening all over social media everywhere. And Zach just brought it to the stage. And Eric Brakey brought it up by making some pretty stark comments about conspiracies to bring people in. And you heard him say there, Mainers don't want their communities to change overnight. Well, that's not happening. Maine is a very white state. It's not happening. And that's just the type of kind of immigrant fear-mongering that the president uses. And Zach obviously wasn't gonna listen to it. And then for the politics side, both of them are trying to get heard. You know,
and why? I'll go to Susan. Why are they trying to get heard? Is this for maybe future runs?
Exactly. I mean, they're clearly auditioning for something. I mean, there's speculation that Brakey's trying to get a position in the administration or something. I mean, they're not going to win this race, but what better way than to get attention from folks that you might want to work with or for in the future than to, you know, have this kind of performance on this big of a stage.
Yeah, Greg?
Yeah, no, and Susan's right. But it's also, I think the media, we need to own a little bit of this. We don't pay attention otherwise. When if Eric Brakey put out a 14-point plan on immigration policy, I don't think we'd be talking about it right now. But he throws up a tweet where he says some really horrendous things. I mean, I don't want to diminish that, but it's what gets us to pay attention, and they know what triggers us.
Well, and I was gonna raise this point because actually I was going back and forth about should we highlight this clip because we're part of the thing there while we're doing that. On the other hand, it's about some serious allegations that should be scrutinized in the course of the campaign. But you're right. We wouldn't be doing a roundtable about the 10-point economic plan, probably.
Yeah.
And they know this, and we know it. But
I mean, it's the same thing we do with the president almost every day, right? I mean, he comes out and says he wants to issue an executive order to change the Constitution, and we spend 24 hours fighting about it, and that happens every single day. We don't spend the time talking about healthcare policy or real immigration changes. What everyone can agree on, we spent time yelling at each other about caravans and other nonsense that are just kind of easier to digest in 5 seconds, I guess.
Let's go to the second district, where this is which would you say is a tight race between the Democrat Jared Golden and Republican
Absolutely.
Incumbent Bruce Poliquin, the two independents Stephanie Bond and Will Hoare. This is also ranked choice voting, which also plays a factor. But again, back to our our debate, which ended up actually being a quarter of a debate because we had only one of the candidates there, Tiffany Bond, for a half an hour discussion for various reasons. Will Hoare was ill. Jared Golden, we had rescheduled the debate from Sunday to Tuesday. He said he had a scheduling conflict and couldn't come. And Bruce Poliquin made clear back in August that he wasn't going to take part. So hence only the one candidate. But is this a reflection, apart from these reasons given, that campaigns are now really more than ever picking and choosing, Susan Young, which debates they'll take part in, and relying more on social media and advertising to get their message out?
Absolutely. I mean, they want to control their message as much as they can. And in a debate, you know, they're not in charge. And so, you know, if your candidate is not really good at debating, or you don't want scrutiny of his votes and his policies or her votes and policies, you know, you don't have him attend. And we've seen this for years, especially with the Poliquin campaign, does very few debates. But when he does do a debate, he's really good at staying on message, just saying the same thing over and over and over again, whether it's responsive to the question that was asked or not, because he's not actually going to talk about in any detail votes he's taken or where he truly stands on issues. So, you know, when he does show up, it's not even a debate because he just keeps saying the same thing over and over again. And, you know, thankfully, we have that problem at that level only in one race. I think some of the other debates and other races have been much more back and forth, and we actually did learn something about the candidates and where they stand.
Greg, is part of this calculus from these campaigns that the political cost of the public being upset that they're not taking part in a public forum, that the benefit of not being there will outweigh that price that they're going to pay?
I'm not sure that there is a political cost for not showing up at this point. I mean, it's become kind of standard, and they I don't know. It feels like there's more debates than there used to be, and there's I think what Susan said is exactly right about Poliquin. He limits his exposure. He's an incumbent. The incumbents don't tend to lose elections in Maine. I think the last time an incumbent lost a congressional election was Tom Allen beat Jim Longley in 1996. And we'll get Mal Leary in to tell you I'm wrong. But I think that's right. So it's like, you know, he doesn't really have a lot to gain by engaging with a challenger, especially a very strong, well-funded challenger who's got, you know, some attributes that he lacks. So he just the line I keep remembering is Jared is a young radical who is committed to a socialist agenda. Yeah. You know, and he says it like, right.
Mr. Poliquin, we were asking for your lunch order.
Right. You know.
But in all the other cases, all the other candidates, Ben, turned out for these forums. So what's their thinking, that they should do this for the public good, or it helps them, or what's their?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think it really is kind of Bruce Poliquin really stands out in all of this for not being in front of the public as much. He's in a tough position, as are a lot of incumbent Republicans in swing districts, because they spent the last 2 years trying to dismantle health care and strip pre-existing protections for pre-existing conditions. Turns out, protecting people who are sick is really popular. And so now they have to turn around and run on this, and they have to turn themselves into knots all these different ways, trying to say that, no, they were actually protecting healthcare when they were voting to dismantle it. And we're seeing this all over the country now with false ads, outright lies. You know, they don't want to talk about health. It's the number one issue. And if the more Bruce Poliquin steps on a stage with those other three, too, it's not just Jared Golden. The other two have kind of free license to go after him, because what do they have to lose? The more that record is going to come out, and that's going to really hurt them. So like Greg said, full steam ahead, stay on message, and hope that a conservative district turns out for the incumbent.
All All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions, the number 1-800-393-5566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Otelco, formerly OTT Communications. From phones to fiber, serving Maine businesses for more than a century, Otelco.com. And Two Fat Cats, scratch baking with an emphasis on Maine desserts and pies in Portland and South Portland, and at TwoFatCatsBakery.com.
On the next Fresh Air, how the Supreme Court became so politicized, and how the court looks now with two Trump appointees and a Chief Justice who's considered the most likely swing vote. We'll talk with David A. Kaplan, author of The Most Dangerous Branch. He was the legal affairs editor at Newsweek. Join us.
And join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. All this week, Maine Public Radio and Television are broadcasting our Your Vote 2018 gubernatorial, Senate, and congressional debates. We expect them to be on demand at mainepublic.org/yourvote by the end of the day Wednesday. In addition, each of our debates will have multiple broadcasts on both Maine Public Radio and Television. You'll find the radio and television debate broadcast schedule at the Your Vote site as well. You'll also find analysis of important issues, in-depth interviews and profiles of the candidates, our Maine Calling candidate interviews, and more. All this and more at mainepublic.org/yourvote, or click on the Your Vote banner on the mainepublic.org homepage.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, the news that made the Maine headlines in October. Joining me are a panel of editorial page editors. Susan Young is with the Bangor Daily News. Ben Bragdon is with the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. And Greg Kesich is with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. We invite you to join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Just a quick thing about advertising. If you turn on the TV, you just can't avoid. This is all that's going on. I realized this morning that I'm actually longing for a room freshener advertising. You know, anything, you know, stain remover, anything.
But I was
just curious if you think if at some point the advertising becomes so over the top that it kind of jumps the shark. The public goes, this is just too much. I'm not even going to watch this anymore, as some have suggested. Or is it just continuing to work, and that's why we're seeing so much more of it, Greg?
It must be working. I mean, they're spending a lot of money, and there's a lot of smart people involved. You'd think they know what they're doing. I think a lot of advertising is again kind of to keep your base excited. And one of the ways you get people out excited and out to vote is by saying terrible things about the opponent. I think we're much more negatively partisan than we are positively aligned by party. So I think that is part of it. And I think also there are a few votes that can move at the last minute. We think about television as sort of the audience is, fragmenting, and there's fewer people watching any specific show. But the most loyal TV voters, viewers are also the older people who are also the most loyal voters. So. Yeah. I think that's what the shows that you like.
Susan, journalism organizations, of course, are doing a lot of fact checking these days, and you know, checking these ads. How effective are those, though, at you know, countering this wave of advertising?
I would suspect they're not effective at all, because who's reading all the fact checks? Journalists like us, and going, aha, you know, I knew it wasn't true when he said that. Is average person on PolitiFact? I don't think so. And as much as you know, lies, distortions, untruths have been pointed out, I don't see campaigns and you know the outside groups that spend and buy a lot of these ads changing their tactics or even changing the ads once it's pointed out that they're untrue. I mean, you know, it takes a lot for for a TV station to pull an ad down when they're shown that things are inaccurate. But I haven't seen a lot of that happening this year. It's more the fact checks are great and it's helpful, you know, as people report on it. I just don't think they're reaching the average person or having the impact of getting ads taken down because they are untrue.
Ben, any thoughts on that before we move?
Yeah, I mean, these ads are pretty good at kind of towing the line between, you know, they're factual but not truthful, I guess. You know, they can find some vote you made in a budget 10 years ago, some little part of it that make that, pull that out and make that the entire ad when that was never the intent. And, you know, they all seem to be these 25 seconds of ominous music and black and white photos of your opponent, followed by 2 seconds of hopeful music and your voice. But I guess they work. I guess they're just kind of planting seeds in people's heads. I like Susan said, I don't think the fact checks really get through. I think we'll see on healthcare. This has been the big issue throughout the country. The two sides have very different points of view on healthcare, and one side's not being very truthful about it. And it seems to be getting through, but we won't know until Wednesday morning.
All right, to confusion over ranked choice voting. We've already been through one round of this in the primary, so there's been some practice with this. But there are indications that voters this November may be confused still about ranked choice voting. As we know, it's being applied in the Senate and 2 congressional races, but not in the governor's race because of the problem with the Maine Constitution, et cetera, that we've been over. However, Greg, do you think there is confusion still among voters, and might that affect the election in some way?
I think that there is confusion among people who are expecting to be able to rank their choice for governor. I haven't actually talked to a real person who was confused by a ballot where there was the opportunity to rank candidates. That seems to be fairly intuitive, and people who went through it in the primary and in Portland don't seem to have any trouble understanding it. But I think people are confused by, didn't we just vote on this? Didn't we vote on it again in June? What do you mean I'm not going to rank, you know, I don't rank for governor? And is that going to play out in the election? Who knows? I suspect not. I think once you see like 4 names and a bubble, one bubble next to each name, people are going to be able to understand that. I think people are going to everybody will go through the experience now of ranking candidates for Congress. And I think some of the mystery around ranked choice voting will be dissipated.
Yeah. Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I've gotten questions quite a bit about why aren't we doing this for the governor's race. I've had to explain that more times than I'd care to. But I think Greg's right. I don't think that it's going to be an issue when it comes down to it. I don't think it's going to affect the outcome. But we will afterward have to kind of talk about whether we want to keep it and or expand it. It does seem a little ridiculous to have it for some races and not others.
Yeah. And Susan, the outcome of this election could affect the fate of what Ben's talking about, right? Whether it's expanded or kept based upon who's elected this time?
Perhaps. I mean, I don't think because of ranked choice voting, you're going to see anything unexpected happen. And, you know, keep in mind that this narrative of confusion about ranked choice voting is mostly being perpetrated by people who are in favor of ranked choice voting. So they want a story that it was really confusing and people didn't understand why they didn't get to use ranked choice voting for governor, because they're going to launch their campaign to expand ranked choice voting to the governor's office. And, you know, the reason we don't have it for statewide races is because the Maine Supreme Court advised, they didn't actually rule, but advised that it's unconstitutional. So that's why we can't do it. And, you know, that's a pretty high hurdle to cross to amend the Constitution. So it's going to be a long effort, I think. But, you know, it's in their benefit to act like the public was outraged about this so that they can perpetuate that campaign. And, you know, they hope to make a change so it's used for all Maine elections.
Yeah, and this could be one of the big stories of the election if that race and the second congressional district looks like it's going to come down to ranked choice voting. And if and you can definitely see a scenario where in the first round, Bruce Poliquin has a slight lead and then loses that lead over subsequent rounds. Poliquin's also hasn't said that he would accept that. He could sue. So it could just be a mess after that. And that would kind of play into all the fears and the stuff that Susan was just talking about, and really kind of cast a shadow over the weeks after the election.
All right, 1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phones to Frederick in South Portland. Hi, Frederick. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, well, good afternoon, Susan and gentlemen. And I wanted to direct this to you, Keith, that I am very disappointed that the only discussion that you had about the only debate that you featured with Zach and the other Senate and the incumbent and then their conservative, the only thing that you mentioned was the circus and clown nature of an exchange of a debate that you had for the United States Senate. I mean, that is a clear example to me of what commercial radio has been doing and treating the American public to, is treating this as if we're not entitled or intelligent enough to understand ranked choice voting. For instance, you just vote Zach A, Angus B, and then you've done successfully what you'd like to do with ranked choice voting. I feel that we're in such a deep crisis in this society with such rancor and disillusionment with our political process, and I have to lay it. This is about the only thing that I agree with a president with. Oh, my gosh, I'm surprised that I've admitted this to the world, is that the media and main public has to do better than what you've done on this program.
Okay, Frederick, thank you.
I'd like you to please address this.
Sure, I will. I think we said at the outset the reason for choosing that clip was actually to make the point that you're making now, that was the kind of clip that gets the attention now, as opposed to, as we were saying during the discussion, the 10 points on, on the economic plan.
Yeah.
But the point of doing the debates is clearly to broadcast some of the detail, to get to the detail of those discussions.
And I would say it was important enough that Zach Ringelstein used his opportunity to ask a question to focus on a pretty outrageous statement that was made by one of his opponents. And, I responded the same way when I read Eric Brakey's tweets, and we wrote an editorial that was directly, criticizing him for that. So it wasn't like a completely, if a candidate for the U.S. Senate is saying something racist, I think that's something that it needs to be discussed. And certainly his opponent, one of his opponents felt that too.
Yeah. And Frederick. Go ahead.
I just want to add, I mean, you can't expect Maine public to control the behavior of the candidates. I mean, this is what happened at the debate, and you've recorded what actually happened. Maine public didn't turn it into a circus. I would argue the candidates did. And so I think it's important, for an office as large as the U.S. Senate to let folks know that this is how some of the candidates are interacting with each other.
Yeah. And Frederick's point is a good one, though, mm-hmm. which is, and we were talking about this actually during the break when I said I was going to air the clip, we were like, well, this is what's going on. So, Frederick, it's a good point, and I take it, and we do take it very seriously. So thanks very much. Let's go to Grayson in Portland. Hi, Grayson.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to speak to, I forget the commentator's name, the lady who was saying that the narrative about ranked choice voting being confusing, being perpetuated by supporters of ranked choice voting to kind of somehow cynically push to get it for all races after the election. I think that's way off base. I think it's opponents of ranked choice voting who are pushing the narrative that it's confusing, trying to sow the seeds of division among people that, we voted on this twice. People have found it very intuitive, as was pointed out. And I just think that was, when I heard that, I was just kind of shocked because I think it's opponents of ranked choice voting who are saying it's confusing, not more.
Yeah.
Susan, you want to respond?
Well, Grayson, I appreciate the fact that you think I'm a lady. Just in the last few days, I've gotten op-ed pieces from supporters of ranked choice voting who say it's important that you run these because there's so much confusion and it needs to be cleared up. We also have Betsy Sweet, who had a press conference. I'm not sure if it's already happened or if it's coming up. And she wants the media to call in because there's so much confusion about ranked choice voting. And it's really important that we participate in this news conference so that we can clear up the confusion around ranked choice voting. So I'm basing my comments on facts and who I've received communications from about the confusion around ranked choice voting.
All right, we're going to take another break. We will get to some of the other issues, including the first congressional district race. But before we take a quick break, a word about tomorrow's show. Join host Cindy Hahn for a conversation about algorithms. Learn what they are, how they're used, and whether they are at the root of our polarized society. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. You can also leave a voicemail question or comment before the show by calling 207-370-3487. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Float Harder Relaxation Center, Flotation Therapy, because self-care isn't selfish, it's essential. More at floatharder.com. And Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communications systems, norrisinc.com.
Hundreds of black women are running in federal, state, and local elections this year.
Black women have been the most reliably voting constituency for many years for the Democratic Party. And so this is about more than just respecting our vote, but is about respecting and honoring our leadership.
I'm Ari Shapiro, the surge in black women running for office this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And All Things Considered weekday evenings from 4 to 6:30. And join us at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling for our Your Vote 2018 gubernatorial debate.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, the news of the month. My guests are Maine editorial page editors Greg Kesich with the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram, Susan Young with the Bangor Daily News, and Ben Bragdon with the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. Join the conversation, the number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. To the other race here on the ballot, the first congressional district race. Again, ranked choice voting is in play. Ben, we have it's a three-way race. What's the takeaway of this one, I guess, at this point?
The takeaway is, I think, is that Chelly Pingree looks pretty safe. That seems to be the case. She beat Mark Holbrook, Republican Mark Holbrook, pretty easily 2 years ago. This year, independent Marty Grohman, who is a state legislator and a business owner, came in and made it a three-way race. I think he thought with ranked choice voting, if he could be, if he could get up somewhere in Pingree's vicinity, and then take a bunch of Holbrook's second place votes, then that could propel him over in the rounds, and that maybe Chelly Pingree was vulnerable, but you know, he really hasn't gotten any traction according to the polls. And there could always be surprises, but it just doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Yeah. Greg, any?
Yeah, you know, I think we might find out that saying that you're going to listen to both sides, which is what Grohman says, and also is true of Terry Hayes in the governor's race, really isn't an agenda that people are excited about. They don't really feel like they have a lot in common with the other side, unfortunately. I would say that Mark Holbrook has my favorite ad of the cycle so far. There's this one we call it, it's called Drain the Swamp. There's scary music, and then at the end there's a scene of a lake, and the candidate comes bursting out of the lake with a giant plug like you would have in a bathtub.
Susan, any thoughts on CD1?
No, I thought that Marty might catch on. You know, the district obviously is pretty liberal, But Republicans dissatisfied with the quality of candidates that have run against Shelley for years thought that they might be attracted to Marty. But as Greg and Ben said, he hasn't really caught on. And what was surprising to me is that he said he wouldn't caucus with either party. And I understand you want to be an independent and, you know, the bridge builder, et cetera. But when you get right down to it, things happen in Congress because you're aligned with one party or another. So if you're not caucusing with either party, it kind of begs the question, why are you even in Washington? They're only going to, you know, be interested in your point of view when they're really close votes. So I thought that was a bit of a concern and where that would leave the district with representation. And maybe folks are hearing that and, you know, wondering the same thing.
Let's get to ballot question one. This would set up a system of in-home health care services for elderly and disabled Mainers and create a board to administer funds, which would be raised by placing a tax on a quote-unquote higher income households or individuals, depending on who you ask. So this one, I guess, Greg, somewhat hangs on the math or on the tax policy, which is in debate about who pays.
Yeah, I think the vote no people would like it to be a debate on the tax policy. I think it's I personally believe that's a miscalculation. I think they will find that most Mainers, you know, the median income is about $50,000 for families. So I think most Mainers are not worried about people with six-figure incomes, whether it's family income or individual. I think that this is a real problem. That it's not a scam, as the opponents say, and I think they are going to find a lot of middle-class families who are having trouble finding people to do this work for them and at a price that they can afford, who are going to be very open to this idea. But, you know, again, we don't really have a lot of polling, so this is all just gut feelings in terms of which way it would go. But either way it goes, if it passes, there's going to be a huge amount of work have to be done on it in the legislature because creates a lot of legal problems and accountability problems. If it doesn't pass, it's still an enormous problem for many thousands of Maine families. So this is going to be the work of the next legislature.
I'll get to you two other guys here in a second, but first we're going to bring in Steve, who's calling us from Waterville. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me. So my question is about the question one question, and I had read an editorial about that on the Portland Press Herald, and the editors had said basically that to vote no on it, and I was curious if their own personal income may come into play with that opinion.
You mean the whole board combined?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah,
that's... No, sorry to laugh. No, that wasn't it. Wasn't it? And if you read the editorial, we didn't really object to the taxation because, you know, for the reasons I just said, our concerns were that this program would be run by a board that would have its own financing, and the members of the board would be elected from constituency groups created in the law that are completely independent of the legislature. So the governor and the legislature would be, you know, producing a budget, and this would be happening off on the side. And that we had problems with that level of accountability. I think that's really sort of the main issue. But we definitely were sympathetic with this is the right issue. This is the this is a tremendous need.
Susan, where did the Bangor Daily News come down on this?
Very similar to the Press Herald. I mean, I agree with what Greg said. We also recommended a no vote for much the same reason, the accountability of the board. I mean, we were also concerned that, you know, everyone would be eligible. We understand why they did it that way. But in a state with limited resources, we don't tend to help out people that are able to help themselves. So we thought it would have been better to target the help to those people who need it most. And no, we never discussed how much money any of us make individually or a family. And we didn't talk about how much the owners of the newspaper make either and what their tax liability would be. That never came up. But I agree with Greg. It's going to be an issue for the next legislature, whether it passes or not, because if it does pass, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. But it's a very pressing issue that the state does need to take seriously and find some better targeted solutions with more accountability. And we would certainly be in favor of that.
Ben?
Yeah, and this is a lot like the school funding referendum from a couple years ago that put a 3% tax on rich Mainers to increase school funding, and that passed, and the legislature took it and took away the funding mechanism, but ended up funding schools, giving the schools some of the money. So I think this is going to kind of play out the same way. I think it's going to pass, but whether it passes or not, this campaign has at least brought this issue forward. And besides maybe the state's workforce issues, this may be the biggest one that we have. We have all these aging Mainers, these seniors, and what's going to happen to them? And that's going to be a major issue that if that's what comes out of this, that the legislature has to deal with this just like they had to deal with school funding, then that's a victory.
All right, we've got about 5 minutes left. I want to get to something that's not on this ballot, but is likely to affect the ballot 2 years from now. This is and it's hard to believe this was this month, but Susan Collins' decision to vote in favor to confirm the President Trump's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh in the wake of this really unprecedented public display around allegations of a sexual assault aimed at Kavanaugh that we all saw. Greg, first of all, how will this have an effect possibly 2 years from now?
Boy, that's so hard to predict. 2 years is an eternity. What I would say is that Susan Collins is under the microscope in a way that I don't think I've ever seen a Maine politician and be focused on. Every vote she takes is analyzed from very partisan perspectives. This was a huge one. This not just a normal vote. We haven't had the level of interest from readers and passion from readers that we had on this issue, except for like in a presidential election year. All summer long, we were deluged with letters, and almost all of them were begging her to vote no. Many of them were letters that were copies of letters that had been sent to her office. After her speech and her vote, I would say the tide turned a little bit, and we got a lot of pro Susan Collins letters, including from writers whose names I recognized were the people who had been calling her a rhino forever and saying she wasn't a real Republican. I suspect that her position, over the last year has related to a concern she has about, where she stands inside the Maine Republican Party. I don't know that she plans to run again. She may or may not, but I think in terms of keeping her her options open in the future, she is kind of sided with her party and with the president really ever since she bowed to the governor's race.
Yeah. Susan, do you think this may affect whether she runs again?
Oh, I think she's running. I mean, she's certainly given signals to insiders and her backers that she's going to run. And I agree with what Greg said that, 2020 is a lifetime from now in politics. But what's interesting is that before then, we will have some indication what difference, if any, Kavanaugh made on the court.
Right.
He will have participated in rulings, and we'll get to see, how he rules as a justice. And, is it the moderate that she's expecting, or is it someone who's in favor, you know, going to allow gutting of environmental regulations, civil rights, reproductive rights, as the left feared? And so I think that could be one of the biggest impacts of this decision on the race in 2 years.
So if he does keep a moderate line in terms of opinions, you're saying you think the sexual assault allegations won't sustain over 2 years or have the same strength that they do now?
I think even if nothing else changes, they wouldn't have the same impact in 2 years that they have now.
Yeah. Ben?
Lots of other things will happen between now and then.
Yeah, I think if Justice Kavanaugh is the justice that Collins described in her speech, then she's probably going to be fine. If he's not, and Republicans across the country don't want him to be, and they don't think he'll be, then she could be in trouble. The commercials kind of write themselves at that point. It is a long time, but it's a lot of rulings and a lot of chances. Plus, in 2 years, she'll be on the ballot with President Trump. What does that mean? You know, she's not a fan of President Trump. She's kind of going to have to toe that line. The number of Republicans outside of Trump's sphere is shrinking. And so where does that leave her? It's going to be a really interesting to see.
We were just imagining. Go ahead.
One of the biggest questions is whether she'll have a primary challenger, which, mm-hmm. you know, 2 years ago, even a year ago, seemed like a ridiculous possibility. But depending on how things play out, that could come to pass. And, you know, that's one of the biggest unknowns. And I think that's one of her greatest fears. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll be sometime in 2019 that we'll know.
Right. And who can run against her?
How the early days of the campaign are going to go.
Governor LePage, I think, will be available.
Yeah.
and he's been very critical of her, in the past.
All right. With that, we're finished.
All right.
Thank you very much. It's been a quick
go guy. Vote.
Susan, Greg, and Ben, thank you for joining us. Susan Young, editorial page editor for the Bangor Daily News. Greg Kesich is editorial page editor for the Portland Press Herald and Maine Sunday Telegram. And Ben Bragdon has the same position with the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel. John Keimel ran the board today. We had additional help from George Thomas in our Bangor studio. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 9 o'clock. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. And don't forget to visit mainepublic.org for all of your Vote 2018 candidate interviews. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.